Welcome to Fresh Research, a podcast from the nonprofit Times. We explore some of the most interesting and sometimes provocative findings focused on the world of nonprofits. Thanks for tuning in. Here at the nonprofit Times, we see tons of great, fresh research. So in each episode, we take a recent study or survey and have a conversation with the authors about what they found and why they think it's important for charities. We'll also give away some books and give you access to other valuable information from the nonprofit Times.
There's little evidence on the relationship between income, wealth, and charitable giving. That is until today's guest crunched some numbers. In general, giving as a percentage of income is relatively flat across income levels, running in the neighborhood of 2%, but that increases with wealth. That's according to a paper by Benjamin Priday, a PhD candidate in the Department of Economics at Texas A&M University. He wrote the paper, Generosity Across Income and Wealth Distributions, along with Jonathan Meir, a professor of economics at Texas A&M. The study is called Generosity Across Wealth and Income. Let's get right to it from the start. What was your major finding in the paper?
Yeah, so we actually approach multiple outcomes to analyze giving. So we're looking at the effect of income and wealth on charitable giving. And we have many outcomes that we consider because we want to take a semi-broad approach to what it means to be generous. So we look at the likelihood of giving, the amount given, and then also the percent of income given. And so there's important findings across all of those outcomes, but probably the most, the outcome of most interest to most people is the percent of income. And I would, you know, in a philosophical conversation, I would debate that a little bit, but for these purposes, I'll say, yeah, that's an interesting outcome. And so for that outcome, we find in general that giving as a percent of income is actually relatively flat across income levels. It's pretty flat, but then it's the percent of income given is increasing with wealth. In general, it's increasing with wealth. And so that's one of the main findings, and that's runs pretty counter to what other people have found. We show in our paper the reason that we find something so different than what other people have found is because that effect is typically driven by outliers and by omitting variables like wealth, like household wealth.
And what can you tell us a little bit specifics about the percentage across households? What were the hard and fast numbers?
After accounting for outliers or across the income distribution, giving is between 1.4 and 2% of family income. That's a range between 1.4 and 2%. But really, the majority of households are grouped somewhere in the like 1.7 to 1.9 range. And that's pretty stable across income groups and really much more stable than what other people have shown in the past.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds almost like similar to giving in the U.S. is always compared to about 2% or slightly lower of GDP. Which household income level had the highest percentage of giving?
If we're just looking at our primary set of data, so we have two sets of data that we look at, just in our primary set of data, we find giving is the highest at 2.01%. So 2.2% in the lowest income group, which is people making between zero and about $11,000 a year. Now, that number should be held with, it's more accurate, but should still be held with just a little bit of apprehension because the majority of givers, the majority of donors in that income group are actually not very poor households. There's a good amount of people in that income group who are actually higher wealth people, maybe retirees who have a low income but have accumulated assets and wealth that they donate out of instead. And so they're going to change those means within that group. But even controlling for that, we still see a pretty flat relationship. And so that's the highest. The next highest would be people at the top giving about 1.9%, and that's people making about, you know, $160,000 a year, $170,000, $200,000 a year. Now we also look, so the data we use, the panel study of income dynamics, really doesn't sample super wealthy people for a variety of reasons. They don't sample just really high income or high wealth people. And so we wanted to get a rough idea of giving for those people making, you know, above $500,000 a year, because that group constitutes a large proportion of total giving. Something like 30% of total giving is coming from people making, you know, above $500,000 a year. So we look at some IRS statistics of income information to get a rough approximation of giving for that group. And we actually find that the average percent of income given for those groups making above $500,000 a year is even higher. So they're giving above 2% all the way up to 8.5% for people making over $10 million a year.
And they were included in your study? The highest percentage there?
They are. It's we segment the data because they are different sources of data. So we don't want to and it's different methodologies. And because we don't have as detailed of data on those super high income households, we want to draw that distinction because we have to make some assumptions and things like that. We tried to be conservative, but without more specific data, we can make some guesses, but it's not going to be as specific as the lower income groups from the PSID that we look at.
Mm-hmm. So some of the data came from the PSID panel study of income dynamics, and other data was it the IRS?
Yes, IRS statistics of income tables. So we didn't get household level data. We're looking at reports that the IRS has put out that are publicly available. So we're not getting we're not looking at the private IRS data for this.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just say 1 year, you're going back about 20 years with the data?
Yes. So for the PSID data, we're going back to early 2000. The PSID has been running since the 60s, but they started gathering household charitable behavior at the beginning of the 2000s. So in 2001 was when the first set of charitable giving data was included, and it's been running ever since then. And so we have data between the year 2000 and 2016, which is the latest available data for the PSID, which covers, you know, 16, 17 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not just a snapshot of, say, 1 year, and you might have some aberrations there. You have a good significant amount of coverage.
Right, and that actually turns out to be really important. So another thing that we do in the paper is use an estimation technique that takes into account household behavior over time or changes over time. So we probably think of some households just having this innate desire to give, this preference for donating. And if we compare those to people who don't give, we're picking up not just the effect of, say, income or wealth on giving, but also how that income and wealth level interacts with somebody's innate altruistic behavior, altruistic preferences. And so taking advantage of this long time frame, and we're following the same households over time, we can use some estimation techniques that pull out that innate household altruism and just isolate the effect of income and wealth on charitable giving.
We'll take a quick break, but more with Benjamin Priday on his paper, Generosity Across Income and Wealth Distributions, right after this.
If you like what you're hearing, share it with friends and colleagues on social media. Use the hashtag #FreshResearch or retweet the Nonprofit Times link, and you'll be eligible to win a book from the NPT Library. Another way for folks to find the show, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're interested in nonprofit events and news, then consider checking out the Whole Whale podcast. For over 5 years, we've covered topics related to marketing, technology, and communications in the social impact space. Recently, we've covered things like tackling Facebook fundraising, why you shouldn't build that mobile app, and why right now is the best time to start your capital campaign. So find us using the Whole Whale on whatever podcast app that you choose to use.
And now more with Benjamin Priday, author of Generosity Across Income and Wealth Distributions.
Can you talk a little bit about why you came up with this, the idea for this paper in terms of percentage of household income that, that people give? Because it seems to be, I think there's a perception or conventional wisdom that, you know, lower income households give more as a percentage, just historically, just based on what people read about or talk about.
Right. So there's definitely an existing literature in the field of economics and in philanthropy that has also been picked up in popular media. And that's, there's something called the U-shaped giving curve that is frequently talked about. And what that basically means is that as a percentage of income, households at the bottom of the income distribution give the most. Households at the top give a bit more, but then households in the middle of the income distribution give the least as a proportion of their household income, which if you plotted that on a graph, you know, with percent of income given on the y-axis and income on the x-axis, it creates a U-shape or a reverse J-shape curve. It creates a U-shaped graph. So that's been pretty commonly cited and found. It's been debated. You know, so there's this, that the academic back and forth of, well, you didn't account for this and you didn't account for that. And so there's this back and forth going on. And our approach is to say, well, look, there's really this really important thing that that people haven't been taking advantage of, which is wealth and the role of outliers. And those two are semi-related. So we say, we show that this U-shaped giving curve, which is where we get the idea that low-income households give more as a percentage of their income than high-income households, we show that that U-shaped giving curve is not really an accurate depiction, partly because people who are included in that low-income group are not actually low-income, like I said before. They're actually, they are technically low-income, but they're not donating out of their income per se. They're donating out of accumulated assets. So if you don't control for wealth or accumulated assets, then you're going to misrepresent what's actually going on in those low income groups. And so that's what we're trying to do, is by incorporating income and accounting for these outliers in a way that doesn't toss them out of the data and introduce maybe some bias, but just limits the distorting effect that they may have. When we account for all those things, we find that that U-shaped giving curve is not accurate, that the relationship is pretty flat.
Would percentage of wealth maybe be a more accurate and more important metric for giving?
You know, some people have posed that question to me, and I'm not actually convinced that that's a better metric, partly because wealth is so skewed. It's held by such a large number of people at the top, right? So lots of people with low incomes and even medium incomes don't have just a ton of wealth. Well, the wealth is held by a lot fewer people towards the top. And so if you were to look at percent of wealth, now you're introducing a different kind of bias potentially. That doesn't mean that it's a meaningless metric. It just doesn't, I don't know that it's the metric that we should go by. And really that sentiment holds for all of this. I don't want to say that the percent of income given is the definitive metric that we should be using to think about the generosity of households. So I can kind of draw that across the board, but surely looking at percent of wealth given would be another thing we could look at. There's lots of problems with that. Like, how do you define wealth? What is liquid wealth? What is what's held up in things that are not liquid that people can't donate out of? You know, there's lots of other complicating questions to that. If we were to go down that road.
Yeah, I guess it depends on just being aware of what metric you're using and the limitations and what you're looking to measure.
Right. And so something that's come up since we've started putting this research out, people have been pushing back on is saying, well, you really don't care about the percent of family income. You care about the percent of disposable income given. And my response to them is, well, sure, kinda. You know, like we mm-hmm. do care about the percent of disposable income given, but that doesn't mean that percent of total family income given is a meaningless metric, right? These are all different metrics that are informative in their own way, and we can take them all in concert and harmonize them and get some better picture. But it's not really a scientific thing to make a declaration about what it means to be generous, right? That's more of a philosophical discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could make an argument that the propensity to give anything, any amount of money, is itself generous. And so there's this back and forth that is less scientific and more philosophical. But that's why I think it's important to, it would be important to consider lots of different metrics.
Mm-hmm. And as far as your paper, if you're looking at it again, is there anything you couldn't get done? Is there certain parts of it that you would take with a grain of salt because the data just wouldn't let you do something, or any sort of, I guess, drawback to your study if you were continuing?
Yes. Any honest economist would tell you that their work always has drawbacks. If they're not saying that, they're not being honest. Yeah. So in the spirit of candor, I'll tell you that we were pretty stumped by, well, one, we couldn't consider high income households in a very econometrically or statistically rigorous way, because we just didn't have data on them. Now, that data might exist, but then you get other problems, like if I'm only using IRS data, then I only see people who itemize, and they're already more likely to give and give more, and it doesn't break out giving into religious and secular giving, which we think those are different, have different behaviors. Plus, tax data doesn't really have a reliable measure of wealth, so then you can't control for wealth. So in that way, there's a shortcoming. We can't really speak to these super high income households in a very rigorous way. We get a rough idea with the IRS statistics of income data, but we can't speak to them in a highly rigorous way that we would like to. Another problem is actually looking at percent of income. So I was saying, percent of income is a good measure, and maybe percent of wealth or percent of disposable income. But really, there's a problem in all of these when we move beyond means and look at them in a more statistically rigorous way, or using econometric techniques. When we look at the effect of income on a variable that has income in the denominator, it just feels a little bit like there's going to be some bias in there, right? If I'm going to say, what is the effect of income on X divided by income? I have income on both sides of the equation. So it's not actually clear how we interpret those results, because it doesn't make sense, especially if you're looking at variation in income. So how does a change in income affect a change in income that's modified by some variable like giving? So it's a little bit confusing, and we were stumped. We generated these results for ordinary least squares and fixed effects regressions, which is just econometric techniques that we used. And we put this caveat in the paper of, hey, we're going to report these, but take these with a grain of salt, because we're not even sure exactly how to interpret these kinds of coefficients, because it seems just crazy endogenous, right? Like, this is a household decision. I don't know that we're actually measuring what we think we're measuring. So yeah, I would say that's definitely a shortcoming, but not just for us. It's really a shortcoming for everybody that's looking at this question without some other sort of statistical approach to account for this problem.
So what would be a couple of key takeaways for nonprofits who are reading your paper? What would you tell them to be like, here's one or two things that you should keep under your hat?
Yeah. So I want to add the caveat for any nonprofits listening. I'm not a nonprofit consultant. There are definitely other people who this is their profession, and they know much more about consulting nonprofits than I do. But
yeah, here's the disclaimer at the bottom that says,
yeah, exactly.
Not to be used for professional advice.
Yeah, please don't quote me too much.
I should probably have a pre-recorded version of that for the show.
Yeah, just feel free to add lots of caveats to me. I focus more on individual and household behavior anyway. But there's still a lesson to be learned, in my opinion, which is that donors at the top of the income distribution are big givers, and they shouldn't be ignored. They should get attention from everybody. So another kind of misconception is that high-income donors really mostly just give to the local opera or their kid's private school, or give to Johns Hopkins so they have a building named after them, those kinds of things. And for super high income people, maybe. I mean, I'm really hesitant to take anecdotal evidence as a broad generalization, but our data that breaks down giving by types is focused on people making, you know, up to about 500K. But even up to people making 500K a year, giving is actually quite consistent across the recipients. So religious groups, people at the top are still giving, the majority of the money they give goes to religious groups. And a lot of that money is still going to basic needs organizations or combined purpose organizations that might do multiple things. And so if you are an organization, like a religious organization or a basic needs organization, say like the Salvation Army or a food bank or something like that, don't think that high-income donors aren't wanting to donate to you, because that's definitely not the case. They do donate to those types of charities as well, not just arts and education and hospitals.
Right, right. Well, Ben, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. And best of luck with your PhD.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm hoping to wrap up soon and then move on to the next step.
Terrific. Well, good luck with everything. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Benjamin Priday, a PhD candidate in the Department of Economics at Texas A&M University. He wrote the paper, Generosity Across Income and Wealth Distributions, with Jonathan Meir, Professor of Economics at Texas A&M.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share the Fresh Research link on Twitter or Facebook to be eligible to win something from the NPT Library. You can also share on social media with the hashtag #FreshResearch. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times, spotlighting research and trends in the philanthropic sector. Till next time, keep up with us at thenonprofittimes.com for all your nonprofit news.